Give me a mic check. Mic check.
Check, check. 1, 2. Mic check. 1, 2, 1, 2. Check, right, check. Have the levels coming through.
Good, good, good.
The things sounding good. Okay.
Right. You ready?
Yeah, whenever you are, man.
What right does a man have to rule another? The thing is so bad, ladies and gentlemen, that if I invented a particular device, pretty soon I'd have to get a permit from the state to use my own product. You cannot get rid of tyranny by fighting tyrants. For a very good reason. Tyranny doesn't exist independently of something else, which is more important. There is a something else which has to be defined before you know what tyranny is. What's that? It's opposite. It's freedom. They are not independent of each other. These are not two different things which are at opposite ends of the pole. They are one thing of which the one is a negation of the other.
They say, why don't you get into politics? You know, why don't you try to run for office? Then you can create change. You don't create change when you're in office. They tell you what to do. This is how we create change, by getting this information out to the masses. We can do more in 1 year than someone can sitting in office for 8 years.
Together they can break us, we are strong. Divide us and the road leads to destruction. Don't you fall a prey to Babylon.
No, never.
They want to pull us all in different directions. So they take you from the root and teach you their own truth. Open up your mind, please don't you be so blind. I'm not in it for the fame, I'm in it for the love. When it's all said and done, we're more than blood.
That's right, everybody. Welcome to We Are Not Cattle Radio. It has been quite a while. And yes, we are in it for the love because we understand that you cannot fight hate. I'm joined by Josh Wiley of statelesshomesteading.com and partner at cryptohero.info. What's going on, man?
Oh, nice. Nice. We can say that now.
Yes.
It's going, man. It's so funny that you open this show with a message of love. Although I guess you always do, technically, with the intro song. But I was just talking with a fellow on Steemit today about the Greek notion of love and how there were two words designating romantic love and agape, of universal love, which we've talked about before. But it's the agape we're trying to cultivate on this show, Jake.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's
agape.
Well, Josh, it's been quite a while. Let's tell people what we've been up to on the side, because we have been gone for quite a bit, and we're going to start getting more steady with the podcast here because we've been working on, and Josh has been pulling the load mostly on the back end. We've been working on a new business venture, and we are crypto. I guess you would call us, obviously you've heard us on here, we like cryptocurrencies, but we've since taken it to another level. Josh has become Bitcoin certified.
Pay attention.
Bitcoin certified professional. So we're taking it to a different level, trying to get a new segment of the population involved in understandings of freedom, whether it's through digital tokens or through activism and things where you can go out and try to spread the word to other people about what's really going on and have meaningful conversations. But anyway,
it's a blessing,
Josh.
It's a blessing and a curse, Jake, in a sense that, you know, the most important issue facing us, besetting us, I think, is monetary serfdom.
Oh, yes. And we've talked about it many times.
Certainly. But there are so few active solution seekers and solution applicators.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, cryptocurrencies have really caught the eye of the public. So it is fitting, in a sense, that for all of alternative media and the liberty movement's failed efforts and energies, at least one of the things that was born of it is poised to change the most important part of the power structure, potentially.
Oh, and I think we've got a new tagline. Stephanie came up with this today. I was telling her about this. Say farewell to fiat.
Ooh, that's a good one. I like that one a lot.
Yeah,
I like that way better than the other one.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think we got it. So Stephanie nailed it. I was like, well, come up with something for our other show. And she goes,
Stephanie, the true crypto hero.
Yeah, the true. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Crypto heroine.
So it has been a minute, but that's what we've been up to, guys. So check us out at cryptohero.info. We got a couple podcasts up. We got a couple articles up. And if you ever want to know anything more about Bitcoin or cryptocurrency mining, if you want to understand how to set up a Bitcoin account, we can help you. Just shoot us an email. You can shoot it here at wearenotcattle@gmail.com, and we'll go ahead and take care of that. So enough of the housekeeping, Josh. It is it's flu season, so obviously it's time to get everybody involved.
It's flu season, and at our age, flu can be more serious. Nobody has time for that. It's my time to do the things I love.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Our immune system can weaken, and traditional flu shots may not work as well for us.
You need more mercury.
Flurad, designed for adults 65 and older. Unlike other flu shots, Fluad contains an immune-enhancing ingredient.
Literally, the product is called Fluad. Hold on, we're not done yet.
What is the flu? What they say the enhancing ingredient?
I don't know. Magic fairy dust.
It's vitamin C.
Might actually be B12 for the old people.
Help provide a strong immune response to the flu. You should not receive Fluad if you have had a severe allergic reaction to any of the ingredients in the vaccine in the past.
So probably
don't
take it.
Those.
So, you know, you're probably going to find out the hard way.
Including egg protein or severe reaction to a previous influenza vaccine. Tell your healthcare provider if you have ever had Guillain-Barré syndrome, severe muscle weakness after getting a flu shot, or have an allergy to rubber latex. The most common side effects of Fluad are pain or tenderness at the site of injection, muscle aches, headache, and fatigue.
It's time you asked your healthcare professional about Fluad.
Jake.
Designed for adults 65 and older.
It's specifically designed for you, baby boomers. Let's get it going. Yeah,
well,
let's.
As you should. I mean, you are going to be taking those mandatory distributions, and let's face it, you know, you got to spend them on something, so why not your health?
There you go. Absolutely. And you know, Josh, it's not just for the old people this year.
Did you hear that?
This week is raising concerns about the safety of a certain version of the flu vaccine and a possible link to miscarriage.
No, you're telling me that pregnant women taking a bunch of heavy metals,
Jake,
and other adjuvants might actually cause some problems?
Did you catch on that last one in the list of side effects? Consult your doctor if you're allergic to latex.
No, stop. All right, we're going back.
Are they putting latex in this vaccine, in this flu
God,
vaccine?
I hope so.
Trigger an immune response to latex except latex?
Hold on. Oh, is this under the terms and conditions or the side effects?
Hold on, I'll find it.
After getting a flu shot or have an allergy to rubber latex, the most common side effects of Fluad are
Good call, Josh. All right, now, first millennial
maybe,
coin.
Maybe
you
just the applicator.
And you, yeah, maybe the applicator. I think you're right there. But hey.
So if I don't go full conspiracy theorist, you know, I try and check myself, guys.
Yeah, you got to keep a governor on it, Josh.
I know I'm crazy.
A new study out this week is raising concerns about the safety of a certain version of the flu vaccine. And
this is a beautiful whitewash, by the way. If you ever want to know how to whitewash something, this is how you do it.
Possible link to miscarriage. Dr. John LaPook is here. John, that sets off a lot of alarm bells for people.
Of course it does. And the key word here, Anthony, is possible link. It's considered more of a hint. It's something that's worthy of further investigation, but certainly no reason.
Just a hint, Josh. No reason to panic. Safe and effective. Here we go.
For panic. Awesome. Now, they studied two seasons from 2010 to 2012, and they did see more miscarriages in one very specific group. Women who had been vaccinated in two consecutive seasons and had a miscarriage within 28 days of getting the vaccine. But the numbers were small. Only 17 women out of 485 women who miscarried.
Okay, hold on a second. Let's do the math on the fly. 17 out of 485 was the number? Was that the number? You're on mute, I think.
Yeah, it's about 3.5%.
But that's not bad, Josh. Roll the dice, man. It's all good. Here we go. Let's finish this up.
I don't know. Well,
yeah.
In a society whose birth rate replacement is like, what, 1.83?
Yeah, we're going down in a hurry. We're going down.
3.5% of all birthing mothers. Hey, that's not bad.
Plus one for the eugenics people.
It's occurring before 20 weeks. And in this group, the median age at miscarriage was 7 weeks. Now, we spoke today to the CDC and to the authors of the study.
which in their defense is actually kind of not uncommon because that's when they usually do happen.
And they said this is considered what's called a signal. It needs further investigation, but they are not recommending changing any of the current recommendations.
What are the current recommendations, John?
Anthony, pregnant women are at high risk for serious complications from flu. So the recommendations is to get the flu vaccine in any trimester. And there have been a lot of extensive studies previously finding that the flu vaccine during pregnancy is both safe and effective.
There it is. Tagline. Got it. We got it in. Good job, boys. Well done.
Which network was this for?
Huh?
Which network was this played on?
Let's see if you can guess it.
ABC.
Nope. Thanks, NBC. Central Intelligence Agency.
NBC.
CBS.
Oh, CBS. Herp a derp. Charlie Rose.
Yeah, sorry. I think that's who it aired on. I'm pretty sure. But anyway, that's the kind of reporting
I wonder
guys.
Who advertises with them.
Oh, gee, I wonder. I wonder if Merck's a big sponsor.
Did I ever tell you my two quick flu shot stories, Jake?
No, hit me.
Stories, I guess. One of them is I got a flu vaccine in high school for sporting.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down!
Okay, I think now we're ready.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I had a mandatory flu vaccine. Well, seemingly mandatory, but at the time, of course, I did not know any of this, and my mother was certainly not a conscientious objector in any meaningful sense. So I got stuck with the needle, and I don't even remember. I think I might have gotten the flu that season anyways, but I know what I did get about 2 weeks after the shot is shingles.
Oh, that's nice.
At age 17.
That's a little love.
That's totally normal getting shingles at 17. Mm. You know, it's not like people with immunocompromised systems in their 70s and 80s are typically the ones who get shingles, which of course reminds me, have you seen these advertisements for getting shingles vaccines?
Oh yeah, yeah. Hey, if you've had chickenpox, you're already infected. It's just they love to sell
the ticking time.
Yeah, they love to sell that ticking time bomb. So continue.
Yeah. There's that one, and the second one. I don't even know why I remember this, Jake. But I guess certain memories are etched into your mind at certain times for specific reasons. I'll never forget a good dear friend of mine growing up. His dad was a drug pharmaceutical sales rep for I want to say it was Pfizer. No, not Pfizer. GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I remember I hung out at his house all the time and was friends with all of his kids. And he came home in a tizzy one day in a state and was having this conversation with his wife about how, look, if they start talking about the Gardasil vaccine and any doctor ever tries to push the Gardasil vaccine on any of our girls, you look them in the face and you tell them to get the hell away from your children. I mean, he was asked to sell this product, and I don't know if he actually went through with it or what the story was behind it. I was pretty young, but I vividly remember him saying that.
Oh yeah.
It's like, well, and then I started seeing the advertisements for Gardasil on television like 6 months later. So.
But it's not just for girls too. The boys need to get it too. Boys can be carriers. That's the big the big sales pitch there.
Oh, for HPV.
Which they still haven't isolated yet. But that's okay, guys. Just keep, you know, the public's not aware, so just keep taking advantage of them.
And there's certainly no herbal cures for any persistent virus or bacterial infection that you could try before shooting yourself up with some crazy adjuvant made by GlaxoSmithKline.
Nope. Good thing. So
sorry, that was a quick sidebar.
It is what it is, man. So we haven't talked we've talked about it in passing, kind of like and it's been a while since we had a show, but the big split between the left and the right. It's actually kind of funny to hear people actually acknowledge the fact that Antifa is sometimes violent. No, get out of here.
Antifa's getting, there was a turn, Jake. I don't know when it was. It was a few weeks
Berkeley.
Back.
It was Berkeley when they were vandalizing. And it was accepted.
Yeah, it's like all of mainstream media turned on a dime, essentially saying, "Look, Antifa's not exactly great."
But no, it was
they lost their federal funding, man.
Well, it's interesting to see this because what what is now coming to play in the world of politics is that there is no discourse. They've done such an incredible job psyoping the entire nation to put them into corners, and they won't even communicate with one another. And here's an example of this. You know who Marc Maron is?
That name sounds really familiar.
Podcaster, comedian, out of Seattle.
Hmm.
So anyway, he had a pretty successful little show. I enjoyed it. It was my kind of humor. It was very dry. But he's been a podcaster for a long time, and I like some of his stand-up, but this is his first bit that he does, and just give me the high sign whenever you want me to pause it. But this is amazing, people. These guys are co-opted, by the way. Either they're co-opted or they're mentally ill. Here we go.
I don't know what he's going to do next. And the people that voted for him, they don't know what he's going to do next. But they have a different tone, I think, you know? I'm like, I don't know what he's going to do next, but I think they're like, I don't know what he's going to do next, man! This is crazy! Then why'd you vote for him? Hey, shut the fuck up! Yeah, that's what he ran on, so that makes sense. I mean, I'm afraid of my phone. I'm afraid of my phone. I can't check the news. I'm terrified to refresh the news browser on my phone. You wake up, you're like, do I have coffee first, or should I check it now? I don't know what he did while I was sleeping.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jake, this is how pervasive the programming is on that particular point. Trump is so unpredictable.
Yeah.
I was watching an interview the other night between a South Korean and three or four North Korean defectors.
This is why I'm telling you that this stuff is bought and paid for. And this is mainstream culture. This is written by the CIA, people. And this is his first bit, Josh. This is his opening monologue right here. Go ahead.
Well, Jake, we're at this point, you know, when you mentioned that there's such a staunch divide and we're almost a post-political, post-ideological era of reactionary identity politics.
Yes.
It's just like false flags. We're at this – we've gone through this epoch – where digital information is just so pervasive that does it really matter whether or not something is an organic or a synthetic event at this point?
Nope.
Is it even possible to discern 100% if that's the case?
Nope.
You know, so are these people that are regurgitating these talking points, are they all bought and paid for, or have the talking points just become so powerful at a mimetic level that people just spew them without thinking about it?
That could be very much the case. And in order to get confirmation, bias, like, I mean, he is in Seattle, so obviously he's going to get extended amount of confirmation bias up there, because everybody's going to be parroting the narrative just because of the way the nature of the politics in that region of the country.
Totally. But I think it's more than that, in that this next tale I'm about to tell you, sure. I was listening to this interview on YouTube between a South Korean interviewer, a journalist, and a bunch of North Korean defectors. Mostly the talk was about Kim Jong-un, and it was an interesting, you know, listen. But the tail end question was, what do you think about Trump? What do North Koreans think about Trump? And how do you think the regime is responding? And all of them said exactly that, Jake. Oh, well, they're very scared. Kim Jong-un is frightened because he's an unpredictable man. And he frightened all of them. But one guy, they all said, oh, he's unpredictable. He's just like the Kims. Very unpredictable. You don't know what he's going to do next. They all said it, Jake.
So it's a sales pitch.
These are North Korean defectors. In living in Seoul now, North Korea, as far away as you could possibly get from Americana, and they're still repeating that same talking point.
It's good, man. I mean, they do a great job now.
That is a propaganda blitz, people.
Yeah. Good job, man. Good breakdown. All right, so continuing with the Vulcan mind meld.
And is there nervousness? You know, like, it's terrifying because you know it's not going to be good. It's just not going to be good. You're not going to do it and be like, oh, okay, great. It's not going to happen. And I couldn't figure out, you know, what was that feeling that I was experiencing every time I refreshed the news browser on my phone. And it must be akin to an abusive stepfather kicking your bedroom door in just to go, I'm burning the house down.
like the alliteration there.
Oh, yeah.
Where he is actually pretending to be Trump saying that he's burning the White House down. That's how unpredictable it is. I caught that at the second time I listened to it. I was like, why would he use that reference? And why would he use burn the house? This is,
I mean,
I think this is scripted.
May very well be. But I mean, that's the interesting thing is, like, I don't know, do you see, aside from public relations and lots of legislative drama, how this administration is really any more or less predictable than anyone before it?
Nope. Absolutely not.
Seems like business as usual to me most part.
But. Yeah. Hey, sell weapons to Saudi Arabia. Let's make it happen.
And oh, scare up some more to protect the 38th parallel? Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, all right. Yep. Don't worry, guys. Those contracts will be coming in very soon. Just let me get the media machine cranking.
Walks out and shuts the door behind him. And you're sitting there with your phone going, I should go, right? Where can I go? And it's just crazy. It's just, you know, the people he's appointing is crazy. It's gotten to the point where I could say things to you that would never make sense previous. But now you'd be like, all right. Like, I can walk up to you like, hey, man, did you hear they're making the Grand Canyon a landfill? What? Yeah. Yeah, they're doing that. Yeah, I guess that makes sense, I guess. But what's their logic? Well, you know, how many times you got to see that thing, you know?
And I like how that all of a sudden the American Republic has been turned into a dictatorship run by Republicans. Where it's, oh, yeah, they've decided, oh, yeah, they're going to because Trump said so. This is mental illness. I mean, I grant it may be funny to some portion of the audience. I didn't even laugh. I showed it to my friend when he was over here. I was like, dude, you got to watch this. This is horrible. And we're both sitting there, and he's just like, man, this is it. Because what do you say? I mean, I guess you're playing to a certain audience, but anyway, let's finish.
Well, that's the insanity of it all, Jake, is that there are very real things going on in the world.
Oh, which I've got a clip. I got a clip of that. I'm gonna play. I'm gonna play Quiz Josh here in a moment.
There's very real carnage and empire building and enslavement of actual human beings.
Yep.
Going on all over the place.
Yep. And then
we cover on this show. You know, no one bats an eye at drone strikes in Pakistan or Palestinian massacre
or
color revolution in Ukraine and Egypt or Iraq and Syria being thrown into the Stone Age.
Yep.
Or financing the Kurds, you know, for the 12th time now.
Yep. $2 billion dollars worth of weapons. I got a clip coming up. And that's our quiz, Josh. So I'm going to finish some of this. I don't know if we can stomach all of it.
You can't approach people about those issues when they're upset about fantasies. There's no other way to describe it. It's these people are living in a fantasy land. It's like if you thought it was difficult trying to get people to pay attention to real issues before. Welcome to dystopia, folks.
This is I still am holding to the theory that CERN did something that screwed our reality up.
They're just going to do half
John
of it.
Titer.
And the other half you can see.
That was a good callback.
They'll see. I bet people go see the garbage, too, because that's a lot of garbage. It's going to be a double thing now. Yeah, I mean, I could see why they would do that. It's okay to hunt at zoos now. What? Yeah, the new EPA guy. I don't know. Guess it's okay. Like, right, I guess that makes sense with their logic, I guess. It's going to be a whole different thing for the kids now, I guess, though, you know. But a lot of those animals are almost extinct anyway.
Here's the kicker.
Just get it over with, you know.
Here's the kicker. You ready?
Extinction's sort of a proactive term with these guys.
There you go. That's how I know it's bought and paid for. Right there.
Proactive?
Extinction is a proactive term with these guys. Basically equating... And here it comes. Here comes the... And this is how it gets burned into your brain. You ready? Very next
line. You never thought you'd say, like, wow, these Nazis are annoying.
Can I give myself a coin for this?
Mm. Yeah. But again, man, that's one that... It's so passé at this point.
I agree. But
to say this, that.
It just,
which is scary in and of itself. But.
Right. Right. Because like you said, either way, it's terrifying. Whether it's written for these people in certain branches of entertainment, or if it's an actual organic thought that they have, that they put into an act.
Yeah.
Not good.
But, I mean, this is why this whole, you know, I saw a guy walking down the street the other day with one of those "I punch Nazis" shirts. It's like, where the fuck were you in 2015 when Victoria Kagan Newland and the Hillary Clinton State Department and the Obama administration were going to, and I quote, "fuck the EU by financing Arseniy Yatsenyuk and a party of actual neo-Nazis"
yes.
"to overthrow the country,
Ukraine.
to overthrow the nation.
I punch Nazis
where,
in the face.
Where were you? How about we ship your ass to Ukraine? You go punch those Nazis, huh? Oh, but then you're a Russian agent, and he works for Trump, too, so I guess you're fucked either way. God damn, these people are just... It's insanity, Jake. What else can you say?
I don't know. You got 2 millennial coins, because that was fantastic.
Sorry.
No, that's all right, man.
It gets me worked up.
Well, it gets me worked up, too, man, because it really does come down to the fact that people are playing ping pong when they should be playing tennis. It's as simple as that. You know, you're doing what's easy instead of doing the hard work.
Dude, people are playing pin the tail on the donkey when we're playing 3D chess.
Exactly. Well, here's a good one. I do have something on North Korea since you brought it up. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what North Korea is all about. This is I think it even says this in the clip. The former Secretary of State for the United States. And he'll tell you how to solve the problems with North Korea, Josh.
I want to ask Secretary Cohen, Ms. Secretary, without divulging things that were classified, give us a sense. We always talk about how bad the military options are in dealing with North Korea. You've looked carefully at this. Give us a sense of the options and why they trouble people who look at them.
Well, as we know, that the North Koreans have as many as 15,000-20,000 artillery capability about 40 miles, 45 miles from downtown Seoul. They could rain Seoul with these missiles and destroy it in a matter of a few hours or days if necessary. They also have nuclear weapons, which are buried deep in their territory, hard right. to detect, hard to get at. So the notion that we would launch a preemptive attack, thinking that we could wipe them out before they could strike, I think is foolhardy.
Somebody give me a sales pitch here soon. Give me, Josh, sell me some weapons.
And that is one of the reasons why the military commanders have never, in my judgment, ever advocated that we take a preemptive military strike
sell me the weapons.
North Koreans. If we're trying to send a signal to the Chinese,
sell me the weapons,
and to others, what we ought to do is call the South Korean president, Moon, and say, put the THAAD missile system back on track. You
yes.
suspended it. Put it back on track. That gives you some defensive
yes.
capability.
Who else
Go
needs
to the
one?
Japanese and say, perhaps it's time for you to have the THAAD system there as well.
Everybody
Start
gets
doing
it that.
Those things in conjunction with the sanctions that have just been voted upon and start squeezing the North Koreans and saying, it's going to get tougher for you. We're going to make it very hard for you to be able to continue this testing and having the resources do it. And then maybe they'll be in a mood at that point with the help of the Chinese and the Russians say, let's get back to the table so we can solve this.
Yeah.
And you get Good. A THAAD. And you get a THAAD.
Everybody gets
and
a
you
THAAD.
Get a THAAD.
Everybody gets a THAAD, dude. Just, hey, just
oh
pony up, people. Just pony
like,
up.
It's like, I'm just imagining, like, all these world leaders at, like, an Oprah Winfrey style, you know?
It's Oprah's, set. It's...
If you'll look under your seat,
it's Northrop
find one free THAAD missile system.
It's Northrop Grumman's free giveaway. You
but,
get a
but
THAAD.
Some of you have buried nuclear weapons from Kim Jong-un, so... Sorry, you're SOL.
Oh, man.
There's a vast ocean of shit you people don't know shit about.
Oh, man, that was the best sales pitch I've heard in a long time.
That was a good one, man. That's the crazy thing about this standoff in the 38th parallel
mm-hmm.
is there's genuine competition now, not just from an arms sale perspective, but... from a different approach entirely, with China having so much leverage over that part of the world. So, I mean, hypothetically, you could go to South Korea and you know, preach disarmament and a two-state solution at this point. Whether or not that will actually happen is yet to be seen, certainly. Whether or not, you know, the powers that be necessarily even want that to happen, Eastern or Western. Mm-mm. But, I mean, it's something that 20 years ago, that was not even a thought, Jake, that could occur.
Well, I do have something for you since you brought up weapons, and we were talking about it just a few minutes ago. And this is our weapons section, I guess. This is our sales pitch, everybody. Josh, I'm going to play a clip for you. This is about the $2 billion worth of weapons going out of Syria. And if you were going to pick one place, I'm going to say near Turkey, that would be running the clearinghouse for these weapons and possibly other things. What country would it be?
What country near Turkey?
Yes.
Or a place in Turkey?
A place in Turkey, excuse me.
Oh, ooh, that be Incirlik?
No, I'll give you a hint. Sibel Edmonds.
Well, Sibel Edmonds mentions running from Incirlik Air Base. If it's a country around Turkey, then it'd be Azerbaijan.
I think we have our first millennial coin.
Yeah, man. Is this the story about the Silkway Airlines connection?
Yes. Here we go.
Nobody can control Saudi Arabia. I tried to contact them. The embassy in Sofia responded that I would never get any answer.
Well, certainly this administration doesn't seem, in the U.S., doesn't seem like it's willing to call Saudi Arabia on this. They must support what they're doing. But can you tell us a little bit? So you're an investigative reporter from one of the largest Bulgarian daily newspapers. You come across a blockbuster story, complete with all kinds of documents and backing, and we'll link to your story in our description of the show, and they can see for themselves the documents. You have a blockbuster story. It's fascinating. But then what happens to you? You don't get the journalistic awards that you're supposed to get. You end up getting into some trouble. Is that not right?
I was interrogated by the Bulgarian National Security Agency because the Azerbaijani embassy to Bulgaria urged the Bulgarian authorities to investigate the issue. The leaked documents, not the content of the documents. So the Bulgarian authorities did investigate the issue. I was interrogated about the source of information that I published. The Bulgarian intelligence agency didn't want to know details about what I found in Aleppo. They even didn't ask me to provide the genuine footage of weapons with the jihadists in Aleppo. They just wanted to know my sources. A few hours later...
Oh, look at that. They just wanted to know my sources. Why would the Azerbaijani embassy care, Josh?
Are you telling me that our world is run by a multivariate, multinational drug and arms running syndicate and human running syndicate? I don't know, man. That sounds like a conspiracy theory to me.
It's a big one, too, isn't it? It's a big conspiracy theory, man, especially when they're shipping $2 billion worth of weapons and get caught.
I'm really glad that this story is getting more attention because it came across my line, Jake. It would have been 4 months ago now, 5 months ago, when it first came out. It got virtually no attention, and then it resurfaced after it was found out in alternative media that this girl had been fired and interrogated, and then Sibel Edmonds got this interview with her. I think she was the first one. But man, this is one that I've been tracking on my website for a long time. I do think it's a tremendously important story, just the way that it works, because it's one thing to just say, oh yeah, well, the CIA and all these intelligence agencies and corporations and banks run and launder drug money, but they're not that sneaky about it anymore. You can actually get down and follow stories like this and trace where they're moving it and when they switch trade routes. And, you know, these are the kind of things that are meaningful articles and meaningful journalism.
Right.
To be able to put pressure on these people to say, like, look, if you can't stop it, that's one thing. But to be able to write accurate information about where it's going on and how puts additional pressure on them. you know, people like Gary Webb found that out the hard way. But Gary Webb also didn't have the internet the way it is now. He tried his best, but...
Josh, I think you know what time it is, man.
My favorite time of the day. I'm dead broke, man. I could use some SDRs this evening.
And ladies and gentlemen, it is that time for the Alex Jones NLP Game Show with our contestant, Josh Wiley. Josh, thank you so much for being a part of the show tonight.
Thank you very much.
All right, Josh, we have only one way for you to earn SDRs tonight, but we do have a couple of clips for you. So it is dealer's choice tonight for Josh. You can have the Alex Jones sermon. You can have the Alex Jones blockchain clip. Actually, I think we should probably save that. Yeah, like an Alex Jones blockchain clip. I'll give you that. Or we can do the monetary prize. Which would you prefer?
Oof. You know, I want to say blockchain, but I'd rather get the Holy Spirit in me, you know? Give me Alex Jones in his Sunday best.
And a lot of people are scared right now. They can feel the energy, and they think it's the enemy's energy. No. It's God coming back into the world. It's light. And it's evil that's already had a long season realizing its time is short. The fear you sense is the fear that evil has in its heart. And don't let that be projected onto you. Have good cheer, my friends, and know I'll never leave you, you'll never leave me, and God will never leave any of us as long as we choose free will and choose God. We are in God's presence. We are with God and the gift of consciousness and life, and we are saved. The world system being constructed is designed to do one thing, and that's kill your soul.
And your babies.
Probably.
And it's going to bring
I'm so
you
glad
down
I...
and twist you.
No, it's not over
and
yet.
Abuse you and have you abuse others and lower you down before it tears you apart.
It's really dark, Alex.
You've got to be lowered first before you can even be on the level to have this done to you. And the gate through which you entered into this evil is people seeking power and to not have fear.
Like you, Alex.
And to be enlightened and be as gods and be on power trips and be so positive.
All right, I'm done with that. All right, so good choice, Joe.
Man, I'm really bummed I didn't listen to that show. I could have gotten saved.
You probably could have. At least halfway through the sermon, you could have been saved. All right.
Also, did he subtly call himself Jesus? Did I catch that?
I don't know. Possibly. It wouldn't shock me. All right, so your choices now are you have the monetary...
I will never leave you.
I will never leave you, and God will never leave you. We'll all be in this together.
It's like, I don't know who else is immortal, man.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, Alex is definitely immortal. All right, so you have your two choices. You have...
Taking C60.
Hey, don't joke. You have the monetary prize, and you have the blockchain clip. Which would you prefer?
Give me the loot, man.
Okay, for...
Save the best for last.
So, for the 50 SDRs, in last week's, or the last episode, there was a Donald Trump interview with Alex Jones... How long was the interview? I need minutes and seconds. Think esoteric, Josh.
Either 11:33 or 33:11.
No, it was 33 minutes and 33 seconds.
33:33. Ah, should have known.
All right, so now we'll go into the last clip, which is the Alex Jones, as I sit here and scoff for it, is the Alex Jones blockchain clip, which is between him and Mike Cernovich. Here we go, and feel free to put the hand up and let me know whenever you want to stop.
If you set up a film, yeah, we're all in a film.
Well, just like what we're in a simulation. Yeah, of course we're in a simulation. And it's just like when you use fruit flies or whatever, a fast reproducing organism to study what would happen over 1,000 generations
exactly.
Over time. Whatever the simulation we're in, it is accelerating our passage of time now to see how people react to more events happening in a future time. So the simulation, it could just be the law of the simulation that the
don't the globalists get that they've lost control and it's all over? I mean, and they should try to get control of themselves because we're all in this together. We better have, start having open debates about what's happening or there's no future like Elon Musk is saying. He thinks AI race could ignite World War III as a much greater threat than North Korea.
Way to step all over your guests, by the way, Alex, right there, where he was just about to launch into something. All right, no.
And re-inject political talking points or geopolitical talking points.
Which
like
are his.
Esoteric. Yeah, conversation.
All right, so this is kind of a long clip, so feel free to stop me, but we got to get through this because this is something you and I need to squash right away.
Well, once you have the AI on the blockchain, so the blockchain is going to create an unsensible internet, essentially, which is a beautiful thing, the idea that you could create...
How good is that AI right now, Josh, showing you ads that you just went to like two websites ago?
Oh, no, man. We're at full Showdance status.
Oh, God. Here we go.
We're at full house status.
Here we go.
Network, social networks on the blockchain. But what happens when the AI goes over to the blockchain? And that's something else that nobody in the media really wants to talk about.
Because it's stupid if you understand how the blockchain works, you moron. Nobody wants to talk about it because your theory is crap. All right. Josh, can you please explain to this guy why the AI will not jump over to the blockchain?
I mean, I don't know what he means by AI. Does
I don't
he
know.
Like, does he mean like a killer Will Smith movie-style right. robot
right.
mainframe?
So, here we go. Here we go. I'll give you some context. Here comes the context.
iRobot.
Everything we're doing.
Yeah, everywhere you walk. And then what happens when they put blockchains on us that we can't even see? We'll become part of the distributed ledger. So everybody will have...
What the hell does that mean? Blockchains on us so we become part of the distributed ledger.
Okay, you are already a part of a distributed ledger, you asshole. This is like, okay, I don't know what it is, especially with, I find it's older people. There's a woman, Jake, I don't know if you've heard of this lady.
Millennial coin, by the way.
Named Lynette Zhang.
No.
She's just this, she's on Greg Hunter, she's this gold and silver. She whips you up into a state of fervor and tries to sell you really high premium numismatic gold coins.
Like Alex, except for with supplements.
Correct. I mean, she has some good information, but she really doesn't understand blockchain technology at all, yet she insists on talking about it every other video. And this is her concern as well, that, you know, all assets and human beings will be tokenized and traded like assets in a decentralized database. It's like, people, you are already a ledger entry in a database, a literal database. The Social Security Administration, I guarantee you, has a database that's written it probably in COBOL or some old ass language from when they originally developed it. Your Social Security number is there. All of your information is there. I mean, it's a national ID program that you're already part of. Like, what, you know, what is this? And people are concerned about this ICO, Jake, doing something similar called AC Chain.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, the people were whipped up into a frenzy because this was somehow tied to the SDR. Of course, it's not actually tied to the SDR. It was simply an array. It was a dict, a program dictionary line of code that had an array with these values of the floating weighting. So they're just using the price of these five currencies in the basket to roughly gauge the price of the coin. That's all they were doing.
And anybody that's a network admin or a sysadmin right now is laughing their butt off at your dick joke right there.
Or, oh, yeah. Oh, no, dicked.
I know. I got you. I got
you. But, yeah, that's all they were doing. And my question to all of this was, or the thesis was that this ICO was somehow state-sanctioned, that the IMF was behind it. And their first example is digitizing tea. So this, of course, is going to lead to the digitization of everyone and the enslavement of us all in a one world currency where, I don't know, Jesus comes back at the end or something.
Man, I need like a we're all going to die clip. I need one of those.
Totally. That's what it felt like by the end of this presentation. Of course, now that ICOs are banned in China, it's very difficult to see how that would actually happen. And furthermore, you know, If you're actually officially sanctioned by the IMF, wouldn't you be monetizing your token with or backing your token in some way with the MSDR, the retail bond that launched in China earlier this year or late last year? Wouldn't that be like the perfect stage to unfurl your plot of bonds and cryptocurrencies destroying humanity? But, of course, none of that.
No, you can't. Dude, it's... It's all right. So let's continue with the nonsense and we'll.
Sorry.
No. Hey, you know what? This is. I knew that that's what this segment was going to be because it was going to run a little long because this clip's ridiculous. So, and this is why Alex Jones is dangerous, people, because he has people like this on that talk out of their ass and they don't know anything about what they're talking about. Here we go.
Then they say, oh, we've got to tear down this whole old part of the city because the printable city can do it much quicker. And then the first test are just a block, then it's a half a city, and then somebody hacks into that AI system, and it can chew up the whole planet in 2 hours and rewrite the entire planet in 2 hours once you launch that AI system.
Buy seeds, people.
Well, I read a great article, actually, in Forbes on how Walmart's using the blockchain. I should actually send it to producers because I really want to talk
about it. Don't you get the printable city is going to be the real weapon?
Well, we don't know.
The Genesis
weapon.
That's the
whole point. We don't know what's going to happen when they can track us. So in this article now, they're using the blockchains for supply fulfillment and supply tracing. So,
which is actually one of the more applicable ways to use the blockchain because, listen, he actually goes over the positive points that you and I have discussed, Josh.
Here it can be used for good or for evil.
Oh, of course. So here it comes. Here's the actually what they're doing. And tell me if this is something that you and I would do, or is this something nefarious?
They can say, where do these mangoes come from? And they could just type in the ledger, and they can find it within
its entire history and the fertilizer that was used and the tree it came from worked on it.
So if you have a disease outbreak, morons, or something like that, or if you have some kind of outbreak or virus that gets people sick, you may not want to buy from that orchard.
Pesticide.
Exactly.
Or you want actual data comparing, you know, organic food supply to petrochemical-laden GMO corn crap.
No.
Accountability in that system.
It's just some robots coming to enslave us, dude, by seeds.
I get the concern because it is IBM that's working on this technology, and they're certainly not, they're the ones who helped to prototype all of those Social Security databases in the first place. So, yep. You know, some of these are concerning developments, but honestly, a blockchain is just a database, folks. You know, they're only going to use it where it's cheaper than an SQL database or a NoSQL database. That's where they're going to use this.
God, that was a very good point because I don't think a lot of people think in terms of the cost of software and hardware to finance these kind of, especially when you're talking about something as big as Walmart.
They don't think about it at all. I mean, Bitcoin especially is a tremendously resource intensive way of storing data. You know, that's why the network is incentivized the way it is, why the miners get paid off, because no one's going to hash just to, you know, secure a network that there is no value in. The value is more than just the immutability. The value is that the immutable digits have a monetary value themselves. So if IBM is just going to centrally manage this whole blockchain, you know, agriculture program, then why wouldn't they just use a centralized database? There's no need for it to be decentralized and resilient and all these things. And even if it were that, Jake, how are you going to get farmers to accept it? You literally have to have some kind of bootstrapped currency mechanism onto it to say, well, look, if you want to track, you know, your mangoes, then you have to run this node with mining software so you can get paid out in the tokens that we're tokenizing these mangoes with.
There you go.
Or paying the farmers directly to tokenize their mangoes. I mean, if it's a voluntary system, you know, I don't parts of it could be nefarious, but parts of it could be really positive.
I think I really might have to ISO that. What if they turn us into blockchains?
Present three-dimensional documentation of that.
Right. So then what happens when we have...
That gives the AI total surveillance.
Yeah, and then we'll have serial numbers on all of us, and then anywhere you go, anytime you pass a...
You already have serial numbers on all of us. See what we just said 30 seconds ago.
That's the whole thing. We've all been worried about, you know, the government spying on us and everything, but as we've learned with how Google is monitoring everything you do, every time you use a Google map, Google is putting it into the deep learning machine and tracking you and creating...
And then they can predict the future, and then once you're able to predict the future, they're able to add stimuli to manipulate us through the algorithm, through our subconscious, because the computer can see a map of our subconscious from our actions that our conscious mind is on.
I want to see that damn computer, by the way. I want to see a computer that can see our subconscious. That's pretty sweet.
Well, one thing I want to point out to people, if you are a regular 21st century internet browser, you don't use Internet Explorer, and you're not lame, you've probably got an ad blocker installed on your browser. uBlock Origin is my favorite just because it's open source, and you know, AdBlock Plus, which is the real popular one, still passes on your information to the advertisers. But there's one that's incredibly malicious, but really cool if you're if you want to thumb your nose at the system. It's called Ad Nauseam. It's been taken off the App Store by Google, so you have to download it yourself. But it not only blocks all ads, but it silently clicks on them as many times as possible in the background to completely obfuscate any kind of data collection. And if anything, it screws with the algorithms in a big way. And it was getting so popular that Google had to delist it from the App Store because, you know, it was rife for abilities to manipulate it. And this whole system they're building, folks, they're rife with opportunities to fuck with them. But we need people who are technologically literate enough to do so.
And for those of you that are new to the show and you wonder why Josh gets his crazy bells behind him, he is our foul-mouthed millennial, so every time he swears, he gets a token, which he can exchange.
I don't even realize I do it sometimes.
It's all right,
man.
You can exchange those for SDRs, whatever kind of currency-backed SDR do you want. All right.
Well, it should be a part of the SDR basket, let's be honest.
I think so.
As much so as gold.
Possibly.
It knows our rhythms, it knows our activities, and then that's the end of consciousness.
Oh, sure. It knows what advertising to send you. If you're on Facebook, it knows what... That's what people don't understand with the deep...
No, it doesn't. It shows you what are called cookies, you moron.
Learning.
Go ahead.
And this is the thing. These people are not describing AI.
They're
conflating two different topics entirely. No, they're talking about art, like... AGI, artificial general intelligence,
yes.
You know, the idea that you could create something that thinks like a human but could possess all knowledge almost instantaneously, singularity, transhuman type crap mm-hmm. that's hyper-religious and probably not possible, you know, versus algorithms for predictive linguistics or for targeted advertising.
Right.
Or, you know, and these things are creepy, don't get me wrong, but... There is no there's no sentient godlike antichrist figure ghost in the machine you know that's going to come out and murder your family. It's a technocratic class of goons that work for tech companies and are very well compensated for doing so, but it's not that Google controls the world. Oh, look at Cernovich talking about look at Google's deep mind analytic system. It's so nefarious.
Deep learning algorithm,
excuse me. It's a DARPA financed, 4-star general laden in Qtel cash grab operation. I mean, Google is not a private company. I mean, this is like total, it's like a Soviet style research bureau that's just really well funded with a different name run by a social justice warrior.
AI, what they're doing is right now is pacing and leading a classic, you know, persuasion principles. They're showing you what you think you want and meeting you where.
No, they're not. They're showing you the stuff you just bought.
You are, and then they're leading you to where they want you to do, and that is why Google wants to control the internet, censor what you see, and then before long, you'll type in things on Google, and they'll know what you're going to look for, and they know what's going to appeal to you, and they'll show you just the right.
And they admit that's their current operation.
Right, but eventually it's going to get out of their hand, though. That's the whole problem that people don't understand, is that
the algorithms are going to be set loose, Josh, to
they'll
rule
go
us
rogue.
All day.
Say, well, what, you couldn't have Skynet without the blockchain, because people would say, well, Skynet, you can just turn it off.
You can't have Skynet without the blockchain, Josh.
No, well, you can't.
But you can't turn off the blockchain. It's a decentralized network. You can't turn it off. So once the AI has achieved consciousness and has handed over to
it's
the blockchain,
it's got its tentacles into everything and can turn.
Dude.
Don't you remember that classic scene in Terminator?
What's that?
You know?
Where they have the blockchain
When Sarah Connor just looks at Satoshi and says, "You're terminated, blockchain."
Oh, man.
You can't turn it off, man.
Can't turn off a blockchain.
Energy everything off anytime at once.
Sure.
And then once it plugs in to these large AI factories that'll be able to take in.
Alex is talking so far out of his ass right now. He had to think about it. Did you hear that?
All right. Large AI factories.
Yeah, here we go. All right, so I'm only going to play another, like, 30 seconds of this because this is running way too long.
The materials and produce whatever they want out the back end. It'll be great for medicine, housing, everything else. But once these things get scaled up, then the AI can literally feed itself into everything and rewrite the entire surface of the globe, leaving what it wants, destroying what it wants.
Well, yeah, 3D printing. So they'll 3D print drones. That's why I tell people they should really watch Black Mirror. I don't know where they got the Black Mirror people, where they're plugged in or who's...
They're not plugged in. They just read books like Josh and I. We could have written that stuff. I mean, give me a break.
Oh, my God. Twilight Josh, Zone clone.
Yeah, Josh, a society based on a social score. I would have never thought of that.
Insanity. It's not already happening in Beijing or anything like that.
All right. Well, all right. Let's
been talking to them, or if they have some kind of transterrestrial understanding of what's going on. But
sure. Well, the Chinese have announced, I mean, before they even had that episode where you go around and everybody has to friend you, or your social score goes down and then you make less money, and then they can social engineer your behavior by that. That's the Chinese model they're coming out with, where you have an ID that's internet, but also personal, corporate and government off your activity, and then if that lowers down, you can't get a job. It's the mark of the beast, and now they just...
Oh, that was a nice little throw-in right there, Alex. I don't know if it actually, if they even claim that it's the mark of the beast, but that was good.
Turn it off,
well, they've been doing this in Singapore since 2000, man, even before then.
All right, let's shut down the segment. Josh, you unfortunately did not win any SDRs on this segment, so... I do have to apologize, but we do always want to thank you.
I've got
you.
Enough millennial coins.
You definitely, and you might be able to exchange them on Cryptopia or something like that in order to get your currency back.
I'm going to mail them to Christine Lagarde and see if she'll arrange a swap agreement for me.
That's quite possible. So let me get our we got to close out the segment properly, right? Yeah, here we go. Well, thanks for playing, Josh. You actually have, I think you have up to almost 50 SDRs at this point, so we'll catch you next time on the Alex Jones NLP Game Show. And once again, we started this show because I was turned on to Liberty by Alex, and then through talking to Josh and listening to a lot of Richard Grove and reading other books, I found out that Alex is...
You were turned off to Alex by Liberty.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That's actually very fortuitous and very enlightening. So thanks for playing, Josh. We'll see you next time. And now we are going to move into our next segment, which is the documentary review. I actually didn't do one last time, Josh. We didn't even talk about one. All right, so this week we are going to be reviewing the documentary Unacknowledged. So we got to play some music for that. And this is a documentary by Stephen Greer, and it is, I think it's his third documentary, but this is more into the foyer of alien disclosure, secret technologies, alien landings, and also he gets into the deep state. Josh and I we both saw the documentary, right, Josh?
Correct.
So we can both speak to a lot of the parts of this. We do have some concerns with Stephen Greer, or just actually, I think more of mine is questions around who he associates with. But let's jump right into it. And this is the part one, and this is about the Roswell incident.
Headline edition, July 8th, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile, found sometime last week, has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection.
Roswell's almost become a joke because there's so much myth and narrative around it. But if you look at the Guy Hotel document, it was a field agent sent to J. Edgar Hoover. Three so-called flying saucers had been recovered in New Mexico. Each one was occupied by three bodies of human shape, but only 3 feet tall. It's become the number one document viewed on the FBI website after we released this.
Now, the craft was more or less an oval egg-shaped craft. It wasn't saucer-shaped.
That particular craft, there were some problems with, number one, getting it on the flatbed to take it up to Area 51.
The interior craft was, it didn't have any actual levers or flight control systems that we would, identify as a flight control system. But they eventually, I think over some time, figured it out. And it was done all by hands. The creatures would put their hands on controls and they'd have this headset on. And this headset would somehow control or help him control the aircraft.
Well, they did discuss the fact that there were bodies.
Extraterrestrial
bodies, yes.
The creatures were about 4 foot. Some of the creatures were mangled, were heavily injured, and their bodies were torn apart.
There were four aliens aboard that thing, and those aliens went to Los Alamos.
And we were told that the extraterrestrial went to Kirtland Field, Kirtland Air Force Base, and then on to Los Alamos.
Two pathologists said there wasn't anything in the anatomy books, there wasn't anything in what our medical schools, they had never seen anything like this.
First I thought it was a child, because it was small. Then I looked at this head and all. The head was different, the arms were spindly, the body was gray.
But the creatures were approximately 4 foot. They had didn't appear to have any ears.
They only had two orifices. They didn't have earlobes. They had two ear canals.
They had an indentation for the nose, very, very big eyes.
And large eyes.
The fingers had no thumbs, just four fingers. Suction devices on their tips of their fingers.
You know, the four fragile fingers and the long arm, real short joint.
Almost looked like they were nude, but they actually had a very thin but tight-fitting suit on.
One was alive. Partially alive at the time that this happened.
It died in, I believe it was 1952. But the bodies of the extraterrestrials that were found at the scene were in a deep freeze, placed in a deep freeze, and sent to Wright-Patt Field in Dayton, Ohio.
One of the briefing officers that was taking us around and talking about what was going on, they said there had been over 100 crashes in that Four Corners area.
So this kind of sets the scene for his disclosure project and his new foyer into understanding how the black budget, which we've talked about, actually we talked about it on the last show, how the black budget and certain special projects show up regarding extraterrestrial activity. And he estimates, and I've got it here a little bit later, he estimates the dollar value behind it, but... Josh, what did you think of the documentary, first of all? I probably should have hit that before we got into the clips.
I thought it was, parts of it were actually really interesting and thought-provoking. A lot of the key testimonies are stuff that I'd previously come across just researching the topic myself.
Sure.
But it was a really interesting introduction. I thought there were some rather crafty parts, like we talked about earlier on the phone today, Jake, that there's one part of the portion of the documentary that is pretty much an overt endorsement of Hillary Clinton in a way.
Yeah, and why don't you go into that, because I thought that was fascinating, your take on it, and kind of the timing of everything and the serendipitousness, if you will, of the release of this documentary.
Oh, well, on the grander media kind of assault stage, I just think it's interesting that, you know, Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project was launched in the 90s around the same time as the X-Files, which I believe, according to Tom Secker's research, is a DOD-financed film or financed series. Certain episodes of it were.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Independence Day, which I know for a fact is a DOD-financed project.
Well, that was to condition people to be ready to fly in spaceships and fight aliens.
Certainly. And Bill Clinton was the president, and he was at one point supposedly working with Stephen Greer and then backed out on Disclosure. And I find it interesting that there was that whole media blitz. And now in 2016, throughout 2015 to 2017, we've seen the reboot of The X-Files. Stephen Greer release another high-profile documentary and become a media darling to a certain extent again. Mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton was running for president. We also had a sequel to Independence Day. And I think it's just really interesting that all those things happened, all those cultural echoes happen, whether they're organic or synthetic.
Well, as Twain would say, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme, right?
Indeed.
So let's go to the second clip, and this is the moon landing. I've got some questions about the moon landing, mainly with the photography. But here is...
Oh, sorry, Jake.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to let people know, if you don't have the clip, there is a clip in this documentary where after talking about his relationship with Bill Clinton, they cut to Hillary Clinton saying, oh, she will try for disclosure.
Yeah.
You know, that no, was I don't have that. That I thought was a subtle endorsement.
No, I don't have that. Yeah, but he's 100% right. Because it's on Jimmy Kimmel again. So Jimmy Kimmel has Bill Clinton on, then he has Hillary Clinton on and asks him the same question, and she gives the same response. And yeah, I can see why that's a pretty good. I'm going to give you a millennial coin. That's a good assessment. All right, here we go.
We should go boldly where man has not gone before. Fly by the comets, visit asteroids, visit the moon of Mars. There's a monolith there, a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object that goes around Mars once in 7 hours. When people find out about that, they're going to say, who put that there? Who put that there?
Dr. Greer has been around.
Actually, Buzz, I think they're going to say, what's a monolith?
Around people with top secret clearance his whole life. His uncle
is that an
helped
app?
To design the original lunar module that put the first men on the moon.
Okay, so there's my first red flag with Stephen Greer. Is that his uncle was one of the first people to help develop the lunar module that put us on the moon. So, got a question there, man.
Why do you have to question that, Jake? I mean, it was a momentous occasion in American history. We went to the moon. We beat those damn Ruskies.
The official photographs are almost all doctored. Yeah, no. and the official film
Don't
footage.
Say that.
Yeah,
how could you say that? I was sipping a martini, Jake. I saw it happen.
Yeah, on the one closed
1969.
On the one closed feed that they gave you. Sure. There were not multiple feeds. There was one closed feed, and I'm sure that couldn't be manipulated. All right, here we go.
In 1961, President Kennedy challenged NASA to put Americans in space and on the moon by the end of the decade.
Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
The Disclosure Project Archive includes testimony from extraordinary individuals who were part of this great effort to explore outer space, including astronauts Gordon Cooper and Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon.
Yes, there have been ET visitation. There have been crashed craft. There have been material and bodies recovered. And there is some group of people somewhere that may or may not be associated with government at this point, but certainly were at one time, that had this knowledge.
And now it's all in the private sector, so if anybody that studies ufology or understands why all this stuff is being classified, is because, guess what? The government doesn't control this stuff anymore. They gave all this stuff to Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin and said, here, you guys go work on it because you've got corporate oversight and you got corporate secrecy laws, so they can't touch you. They can FOIA us, so you guys just take the projects over. Just like the, whatever it is, the, I can't remember.
Well, did you see last year, Jake, that after, or was it 2 years ago, 2015, when the undocumented adjustables for the Defense Department showed $8.3 trillion missing?
That's probably going to Lockheed Martin and those guys. Here, build us spacecrafts, guys.
It absolutely was, because at the very same time that this is happening, Lockheed Martin spun off its financial division, its bookkeeping division.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, into a separate corporate entity.
It could
handle the inflows.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, we got a new spaceship coming out, guys. The 2018 is just, it's gangster.
Get your Gen 3 night vision goggles ready, folks.
That have been attempting to.
Please explain that joke for people that missed it.
Well, I've never done it myself or seen anyone do it, but I claim there are a lot of people that claim if you purchase Gen 3 or Gen 4 night vision goggles, which are tremendously expensive on the open market, and the best ones are all military equipment. So if you get a hold of these things, it has to be through, it's usually a Russian supplier or a Russian optic,
mm-hmm.
because the American ones are all technically classified. But evidently, if you look up at the stars at night with one of these things in an area without a lot of light pollution, you will see all sorts of interesting things zipping about that are decidedly not satellites. But I've never seen it myself, but there are a lot of people that say that's the case.
Interesting. Well,
a lot of credible, like people like Catherine Austin Fitz claim that that's the case. So,
all right. Well,
conceal this.
If anyone wants to drop 4K and give us some video,
one side of the lab.
We are not cattle at gmail.com, guys.
And he said, by the way, we've discovered a base on the backside of the moon. And I said, whose? What do you mean, whose? And then he pulled out one of these mosaics and showed this base, which had geometric shapes. There were towers, there were spherical buildings. There were very tall towers and things that looked somewhat like radar dishes, but they were large structures. And at that point, I became frightened and I was a little terrified, thinking to myself that anybody walks in the room now, I know we're in jeopardy. We're in trouble because he should be giving me this information.
There you go. All right, so now we're
getting... It is interesting that that is one of the points that is hammered home throughout the documentary. It's like space is weaponized. It's already weaponized.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I didn't think about that the first time I watched it, but now that you're playing these clips over, I'm thinking of the documentary. That was a very pervasive theme.
And I was going to play an evidence clip, but I don't think I need to play that. So I'm going to kind of...
Join the Space Corps, Jake.
Absolutely. Here we go.
You like, what was that?
So can the government keep a secret?
Say what now?
What was that 90s movie that was about? It was like a space war satire almost.
Spaceballs?
No, not Spaceballs. It's the 80s. There's one about like the Earth is essentially like a one world fascist government fighting some like race of bugs.
Oh, Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers. Woo! There we go. We'll just go full on Starship Troopers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Join the Space Corps.
That's it. Here we go.
This big.
UN Space Command.
One of the biggest weapons in the intelligence community's arsenal is our general belief that the U.S. government couldn't possibly keep a secret this big.
No, Daddy would never lie to me.
From the American public. But the existence of the National Reconnaissance Office remained secret for over 30 years. The mere existence of the NSA, jokingly referred to as no such agency, was kept secret until it grew so large that it was quite conspicuous. And those working in the Manhattan Project developing the atom bomb were told that any secrets that they disclose would result in 10 years in prison, or an equivalent of a $100,000 fine. Only when the weapons were used at Hiroshima and Nagasaki did the government disclose what they were.
Of all things to keep secret, the fact that there is this bountiful option that we have of reaching out into the stars and being friendly neighbors with other civilizations and sharing information, sharing resources, and sharing knowledge and sharing spiritual insights and values, to suppress that information and to conceal it is part of the efforts of a national security state that is threatened by that reality. And so this is one of the ultimate secrets that needs to be exposed.
We have indeed been contacted, perhaps even visited, by extraterrestrial beings. And the U.S. government, in collusion with the other national powers of the Earth, is determined to keep this information from the general public. Victor Marchetti, former special assistant to the executive director of the CIA.
And in this document from the Canadian government, the matter is the most highly classified subject in the United States government, rating higher than the H-bomb. That was the most top secret doomsday weapon at the time in development. And the second item, B, flying saucers exist, period. C, their modus operandi is unknown, but concentrated effort is being made by a small group headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush. And then D, the entire matter is considered by the United States authorities to be of tremendous significance. What is more sensitive than the development of the hydrogen bomb prior to its detonation? The UFO issue. A priori, therefore, the entire subject has been managed in a way from the 40s onward with extraordinary secrecy around it. The event at Roswell, because it resulted in the acquisition of materiel that could be studied. It created a sea change in the whole national security organization, because within weeks of that event, the CIA was formed. Within weeks, there was the formation of the Air Force, which was split off from the Army Air Force. It also led, however, the development of unacknowledged special access projects, which is why Eisenhower, even though he knew about the subject on a fairly deep level, had completely lost control of it by 1961 when he left office.
So now we're about to get into the fun stuff. I'm going to ram through these next few clips because they're all pertinent to what this is, and then we'll do a summation here at the end.
But he's talking about the illegal part of it. He's not talking about the conventional military.
But it's now the military-industrial intelligence complex that are moving bureaucratically toward establishing dominion and control over the entire democratic process in the country, and that they're waging war, invading the Middle Eastern oil fields and occupying the oil fields, attempting to establish what they themselves refer to as full-spectrum dominance.
But we're going to smoke them out.
And so the public has to understand there became to be this bifurcation, that this separation between legitimate national security and military operations and the deep black programs that are unacknowledged. We're talking about the black budget, the deep black, super secret, unacknowledged budget that runs in the $100 to $200 billion a year. I'm being conservative.
Woo-hoo.
My '03 budget calls for more than $48 billion in new defense spending.
More money for the Pentagon when its own auditors admit the military cannot account for 25% of what it already spends.
According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
Now, what day was that on, Josh?
September 10th, 2001, was it, Jake?
I believe so.
$0.3 trillion, with a T. That's $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in America.
I do just want to briefly state, like, no matter what your position on ufology is or black budget secret space program type stuff, those two things primarily are the greatest indicator that something is afoot. One, the sheer amount of money that they're shaving off of before what was just black budget stuff now is like a whole banking enterprise,
yep,
and budgetary enterprise. This isn't sheer greed. It's not even about traditional geopolitical power metrics at this point. I mean, this is enough money to build an alternative infrastructure for a new civilization somewhere. So that's not about, oh, corruption.
Yeah, keep
just
that
run-of-the-mill corruption.
Keep that in mind, people.
We're spending well over $100 million per day on classified programs that have no congressional oversight, no public scrutiny. There's no monitor of these programs. A number of these programs go directly through Congress, totally. When you start going through these documents, these programs start dropping off the radar screen. These are all classified programs within the defense budget, but they don't supply any technical information on the program.
And if people think that...
Hey, do you remember how much NPR said the black budget was?
Oh, it was like $20 billion or something like that. $70 billion.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think it was like 30. Good try, guys. Once
Jake,
again.
I think I got it. We were talking the other day about why Stephen Greer, the creator of this documentary, earlier today, about what this documentary was, if he truly is just a stooge, which we'll get to by the end of these clips, I think.
Yep, we got three more.
It's totally a global governance blitz, man. I'm just now putting this together as
that
I listen
work
to this. Did you hear that word? No oversight.
Yep.
No oversight. What could provide oversight to the world hegemon?
That's a good point.
Only a global government.
Interesting. He talks about the Constitution a lot. So, but I'll keep that.
That is true.
I like the thesis though. I'll roll with that for a second.
I'll check my thesis for that.
All right, stand by.
The Congress and the President actually have a handle on this. They're gravely mistaken. They do not. This is where we get into the structure of secrecy.
The structure of secrecy is complex and multifaceted. We've been led to believe that we live in a mostly transparent democracy, with the president at the top of the intelligence food chain, a true commander-in-chief.
This is a really good point that they make here, though.
The reality, however, is much different.
A
shadowy government with its own Air Force, its own Navy, its own fundraising mechanism, and the ability to pursue its own ideas of the national interest, free from all checks and balances, and free from the law itself.
There's...
So, the other clip that I think I cut it off too early is where they talk about how that when they're talking about the disclosures, they talk about... All right, there you go. Sorry, I was burning some time until you got back.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's all right. All right, so here's the last... Or I got two more clips. But this is about the head of intelligence, so here we go.
This document lists the compartmented operations out of the Nellis facility, what the public wrongly calls Area 51. I gave this document to the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Tom Wilson. Now, this is J2. This is the guy who puts the intelligence briefings together for the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States of America. And he got hold of one of these compartments, and he said, "Hello, I'm Admiral Tom Wilson. I want to be read into or briefed on this project." They said, "Yes, sir, we know who you are, and you don't have a need to know."
There you go. Hey, dude, that's a great title. Yeah, we're all out of those.
Well, to reinforce some of the points of this documentary, when it mentions Kennedy and his original bid for the space program and to unify the Soviet Union and the West through a joint effort to explore space, one interesting thing to me is that he put Bobby Kennedy in charge of pretty much everything. You know, and that wasn't even enough in the end for the man. So just think, food for thought.
And George H.W. Bush refused to give him the information. Said he'd have to go to Congress and get Congress to have the Congressional Research Service at the Library of Congress declassify it to get it to him if he was going to get it. That's a true story.
In some of these cases, absolutely, the president has no need to know because he's a temporary employee.
He's strictly a temporary employee.
He does not have a need to know on some of these deeper black programs within the Skunk Works, within the Boeing Phantom Works, and also within the Black Widow group of Northrop.
Yeah, I could not think of the Skunk Works project. It was driving me nuts. I had it on the tip of my tongue, and I couldn't get there. All right, last boys. Yeah, last clip, and it's your favorite.
Initially, I have to admit, the CIA director, I thought, to be honest with you, that he was sort of picking my brain to find out what I knew, as opposed to really not knowing. By the time the three-hour meeting was over, it was quite clear that the emperor had no clues. He later denied the meeting had happened for a briefing. This is a wonderful thing. Now, people say, how could he write this letter basically saying that this meeting and what I said about it was a distortion of the truth? I said, because he didn't realize there was a record beforehand. And thank God, I saved the document that is the original invitation. And in that letter, it is explicit. I talked to Woolsey this morning, and he suggested getting together. There is an active attempt being made at lower levels of government to sabotage Project Starlight, which is the initiative I started and Lawrence Rockefeller helped fund to bring all these top secret people together and recommend these changes to the Clinton administration.
Oh, there you go. Oh, millennial coin. Wrong button. There's the Clintons. There you go. That was a good catch, man.
Wasn't Woolsey PNAC guy, too?
Yeah, I think so.
Woolsey. Yeah,
I think so.
I think so as well. That his name sounds familiar. Sounds like it's connected to that.
So that was it for the clips, and that was my other red flag. Is that anytime you're connected with those guys, I have to, even though it's the quote unquote the good Rockefeller,
yeah,
whatever that means.
Well, oh, did you get that clip?
Yeah, I just played it.
Oh, did they mention Lawrence Rockefeller?
Yeah.
I didn't catch it.
Or he said all right. Well, you didn't catch it because you have to be paying very close attention. Here, I'll play it one more time. It's right at the very beginning. He talks about the, the study that Lawrence Rockefeller funded, and that's the only time he's ever brought up here.
Which study?
I have to admit, the CIA director. I thought,
project.
To be honest with you, that he was. And thank God, I saved the document that is the original invitation. And in that letter, it is explicit. I talked to Woolsey this morning, and he suggested getting together. There is an active attempt being made at lower levels of government to sabotage Project Starlight, which is the initiative I started and Lawrence Rockefeller helped fund to bring all these top secret people together and recommend these changes to them.
There you go.
Yeah, Project Starlight. That's the Lawrence Rockefeller connection.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's very...
The guy doesn't have a career without Project Starlight.
Very true, and it's very interesting that I find the documentary fascinating. I would recommend everybody, if you're interested in ufology or if you're interested in black budget stuff, it's an interesting watch. You'll probably learn something and gain some knowledge from it. So from that perspective, I would recommend it.
I would too. It's a fairly good primer, to be honest.
Yeah, and the other thing is that those are the couple of questions that we have, but like I said, and like I've kind of hashed out with Josh just out of my own psyche, is that even though he was funded by Lawrence Rockefeller, you can't refute what the guy's done for uncovering and declassifying not only U.S. government documents, but government documents around the world, so that we could have documentation of events that actually did occur. Now, whether these were man-made or whether they were made by aliens, I don't know. I used to be a staunch believer that the alien ufology stuff was kind of nonsense. But, you know, I'm a big boy. If you can show me better evidence than my current thesis, then I will rewrite my thesis. And as the great John Taylor Gatto said, I will keep testing that thesis until the day I die, and it probably will never survive. But it is what it is.
There's just way more questions than answers at this point. And that's another reason why I think you can discern that there's something going on there. Because if you're a reader of Carol Quigley, one of my favorite Quigley quotes from Tragedy and Hope, and I paraphrase, he says something like, you know, the vast majority of intelligence that intelligence agencies collect is just open knowledge that's known to the public already.
Sure.
So the most of their job then is not the collection of the information, but the spreading of the disinformation.
Interesting.
Just the fact that there's so much just information in general and ridiculous information and very plausible information on this topic floating around in all these places leads me to believe that there's something going on there. Certainly the missing money.
The missing money is a big one too.
And Catherine Austin Fitz does a great job breaking that down. But the thing is, Jake, I mean, if people don't know who are listeners to your show about Lawrence Rockefeller, because, you know, there's the three Rockefeller brothers that after John D. Rockefeller Jr. died, you know, his sons, Nelson, who was the politician, ran for office many times. And you had David Rockefeller, obviously, who's, you know, kind of like this behind-the-scenes puppeteer. He's working Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Brzezinski as these assets and co-founding the Trilateral Commission. And then they just say, well, Lawrence, he was the humanitarian of the family. But Lawrence Rockefeller, since 1937... He took his grandfather's seat. He took John D. Rockefeller's seat at the New York Stock Exchange. He was the founding member of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund and ran it for 42 years. And he was also a founding trustee in the family fund. So he was literally managing the Rockefeller family's purse strings directly. He wasn't a philanthropist. You know, he was as much a money guy as David Rockefeller was.
It's interesting. Yeah, but
the other interesting thing is that he does have one high-profile connection to one of his brother's dear friends, Henry Kissinger, and that connection is that he was a co-chair on the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, that he ran the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, the Special Studies Project.
Oh, because interesting. The
Rockefeller Brothers Fund for many years operated as essentially a think tank, not just the purse strings of the family.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, but the Special Studies Project, I've written about that on Stateless Homesteading a couple of different times. It is a total global governance whitewash. And the key part about it, I think, is that it calls for the building of multilateral, multinational institutions to bind West and East together. Is a big talking point from this document. And that's totally, in my opinion, what the core of when people say the New World Order.
Yeah.
That's what that means. You know, the the merging of West and East into some kind of supranational structure, governance structure, and eventually monetary structure. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. But I find it fascinating that Lawrence Rockefeller, in all of these exploits, finds time to go pal around with Stephen Greer and give him money to go hang out with the intelligentsia and have the ear of the Clinton administration. It's just – it's fascinating to me, Jake, that he goes on – he's writing with Henry Kissinger about the structure of global governance and how to pull it off, and that he's also working with alien shit. And quite frankly, both of those gambits, even though he was writing about them in what the 1950s, 1960s, when that special studies project was initially published, all of this stuff is now coming is only coming to fruition now. I don't know. Is Lawrence Rockefeller still alive?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure he's dead, but well, it wouldn't surprise me if he's kicking around still. I think he died fairly recently.
Well, we can always consult the NSA and see what they have in their database. Let's find out.
Yeah, he died in 2004.
There you go. You win. Well, it's I don't know. It's fascinating, man, because from that angle I can see because all roads lead to Rome at that point, right? We need some kind of
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a very astute observation. So that's it for the that's it for my take. Josh, you said you would recommend the movie. Once again, we'll do one every episode or try to. And hey, maybe we should do the BBC documentary next time, Hypernormalization. Maybe we should do that one.
Ooh, that'd be a great one, because that's another one that I would also recommend. Is a fascinating watch, but is laden with some serious propaganda.
Oh yes,
as most of Adam Curtis's work is. He's so stylish and so good, but he always has to throw his little establishment digs in there.
Oh, 9/11 was totally by the Muslims, Josh. You know that. But anyway,
yeah, and DDT's safe for humans,
of course. But hey, that's all I got for the show. Anything else you want to part with the guests before we sign off here?
Oh no, man, just thanks for listening in as always. And if you are interested in cryptocurrencies at all, do check us out at cryptohero.info, because we've been putting out a lot of stuff lately. Our Steemit account is really active. I'm really trying, Jake, this time to invest myself in seeing how Steemit really works and if it's actually a viable platform, for not just for as a decentralized social media application, but for an alternative fundraising mechanism in the face of the adpocalypse. You know, but at the same time, I have some serious misgivings about the way Steemit works and how relatively easy it is to flag people's content and get it pulled down or reported or buried. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Well, that's all I got for the show. Thanks to Josh Wiley for coming on board, and thanks for you guys to listening. Remember, get a friend, get informed, and get involved, and peace, love, and liberty to all of you liberty lovers out there. We love you guys very much. Share the show with people you know, people you love, and people you like, and hopefully we'll get some people to start leaning in the right direction as far as what to be focused on. Take care, everybody.